The president of the Barna Group says Christianity is no longer as Jesus intended. It is unchristian. We'll ask him what that means. And Hillary Clinton is ahead nationally, but could she lose the first four primary states? We'll ask Democratic pundit Carl Jeffers. Also, Plano, Texas gets the Grinch Award tonight. We'll tell you why. This is Jerry Johnson live from Criswell College. Join us as we look at today's news from the Christian worldview for Christ and culture.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy.
I have a dream.
It depends upon what the meaning of the word is. Yes.
And the people who knocked these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
We will not tire, we will not falter, and we will not fail.
Welcome to Jerry Johnson Live. For the next hour, this is your place for relevant discussion of topics in the news and in our culture from a Christian perspective. Later in the show, we'll open the toll-free lines for your questions and comments. You may also email us at talk@jerryjohnsonlive.com. Now, here is Penna Dexter.
I'm here. I look forward to this challenge. I think Governor Huckabee has probably inspired me as much as Ronald Reagan.
Wow, that's a pretty big statement for a person who's been in the Republican Party a good long time. He is Ed Rollins. And, you know, the rap on Mike Huckabee has been that he has been campaigning on a shoestring, that he really has no organization or not much organization. And that's certainly because he hasn't had very much money. Well, now, today comes the announcement that Ed Rollins, who ran President Reagan's campaign, has been appointed Mike Huckabee's campaign manager. And he says he's absolutely thrilled to be there.
Ed Rollins is a name very familiar in American politics. His extraordinary record of helping to bring achievement and victory to presidential campaigns is certainly well known.
That, of course, is Mike Huckabee announcing his new campaign manager, Ed Rollins, and that really shows that Huckabee's serious. Rollins has been a force for many Republicans, including Reagan, and Mike Huckabee says he's thrilled to have Ed Rollins lead his campaign.
Ed will help us not only to assemble an expanding team, but also to give us the kind of really experience that he has had, and it will be a tremendous benefit to us.
All right. And the question is, because we've seen a report earlier this week that the Democrats are kind of being quiet about Mike Huckabee, that they're hoping he's the nominee because they think they can squelch him and crush him. And so my question for you is that the case? Do you think Mike Huckabee could beat the Democrat, whether it be Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, John Edwards, whoever it is? Does Huckabee have a chance if he is the nominee? And ladies and gentlemen, Peggy Noonan, of course, speaking of the Reagan administration, she was a speechwriter for Ronald Reagan. She writes for the Wall Street Journal. And she says that the Republican race, she's got a piece out today, the Republican race looks at the moment to be determined primarily by one thing, the question of religious faith. And she asked the question, would Reagan survive in today's GOP? And is Mrs. Clinton in for a fall this winter? And especially that first question, would Ronald Reagan survive in today's GOP? And also the question, will Mike Huckabee be crushed? Is he in the big league and not powerful enough to play with the big boys if he is the nominee? Give us a call and let's see what you have to say about that. The number is 1-800-881-9270. You know, the Barna Group is well known for its research on trends within Christianity. And this group's president has come out with a book that details the opinions of young Americans about Christianity. The news is not pretty. He says they are hypocritical. According to young people ages 16 to 29, they're anti-homosexual, they're sheltered, they're too political, they're judgmental. They're talking about us, ladies and gentlemen. I've got some questions about this, and I'm sure you will, too. We are going to interview David Kinnaman, president of the Barna Group, later in the program. Also, is there really a hillabust? Hillary Clinton Is she inevitable? Doesn't sound like she is. She's not the inevitable Democrat candidate. Obama is rising in the early states. He's rising among blacks. He's rising among women. He's rising among whites. And we're going to ask our Democrat friend, Carl Jeffers, what all of this means. Is the Clinton campaign purposefully raising the C word? Now, the C word is not Christmas. It's cocaine. We're going to ask Carl Jeffers about that later in the program. We're also giving the Grinch Award to the city of Plano, Texas. And just for full disclosure, I actually live in that city. Hiram Sasser of the Liberty Legal Institute is going to join us to explain why. Ladies and gentlemen, give us a call and answer the question, is the Oprah factor working for Barack Obama? What do you think? Why is he rising now among women, among black women, among blacks, as well as among whites? Also, do you think Mike Huckabee, if he were the nominee, would he just be crushed by Hillary Clinton? I'd love to hear from you on that. Again, the number is 800-881-9270. And what about Ronald Reagan? Could he win in today's climate where religion has become a factor? Is religion too much of a factor in this presidential campaign? It certainly is a factor. People are pretty excited about Mike Huckabee and the fact that he is a Christian. Why is that? 800-881-9270. All those subjects are on the table, and we would absolutely love to hear from you. Well, ladies and gentlemen, President Bush says that he wants Congress to send him a budget with no strings attached.
I urge them to pass a clean spending package that meets the reasonable spending levels I've put forward, without gimmicks, without policy riders that could not be enacted in the ordinary legislative process, and with much-needed funding for our troops in combat.
Well, the Senate has done one thing. They've actually killed the energy tax package, which means there won't be new taxes on oil companies. President Bush happy about that. But very interesting that Congress has done so little. There have been 63 votes in Congress trying to basically say and provide a date when our troops will leave Iraq. And that is the main reason why there has not been one of these packages, these appropriations bills passed. They're trying to slap it all together into one big bill. And President Bush says he wants this budget to have no strings attached. Well, we are taking your calls. Again, is Mike Huckabee playing in the big leagues where he has no business? The number is 800-881-9270. Let's go to Mia in McKinney. Hi, Mia.
Hi. I wanted to say about Oprah and Obama. Unfortunately, nowadays our celebrities or quote celebrities have more influence than our parents, grandparents, and other noble figures.
Is she behind the rise of Obama among blacks and women that has just kind of shown itself this week?
Yes. Absolutely, and it's put his name out there. Whereas before, we knew a little bit about the Muslim, but now he's been kind of lifted to a different platform level, kind of socially, I guess, is what I feel. And I feel it's a
good thing or bad thing?
Oprah influence.
Good or bad?
Not good.
Are you an Oprah fan?
Huh?
Are you an Oprah fan?
Well, neither here or there. I think her Christian views are not as Christian as I would like them to be, but I wouldn't say that I'm a fan. But, you know, I do know that she has a very, very strong influence.
Healthy respect for Oprah. She's got a little mushy spirituality, I'd say. Let's go now to Euless and talk to Reynolds. Reynolds, thanks for calling.
Hi, Penna. Thanks for taking my call. Just a comment, a little background. I'm a former political reporter, worked in D.C. and in Austin, and so I've been around the track a couple of times. And also I'm odd in that I'm an evangelical Christian, and the people listening to this program, yourself and myself and others, we're not like the rest of the people out there. And I would use the number of 90% don't see the world like we do. And so that means 90% of the electorate doesn't. We're not going to see the world like Oprah does. Oprah has a tremendous appeal to a lot of women and some men as well. Not that the celebrity factor is as strong as it once was, but I think it will get attention to Obama, And what he's trying to do is build momentum, and it may serve to help him get over the hump in Iowa and beat Hillary. I guess the other thing is the nation ready for Obama? I'd say it's as ready as for a liberal Democrat as it's ever been. And someone mentioned to me as well, he's from a Muslim family. You know, I don't want that to happen. Well,
I think his father was a Muslim.
Right,
I don't know if he's
right.
really a practicing one. Well, one more question. Since you've got such a background in politics, what about this idea that Huckabee is just out of his league?
Well, he doesn't have the experience in Washington, but that's not a negative for me. I'll tell you, we voted for a small state governor for president once before, and he's an evangelical, Jimmy Carter, and that's the only time I've voted for a Democrat the last 40 years, and I'm sorry I did. But Mike Huckabee is a different animal. He's strong on some of the things that I feel important. I wish he was more of a fiscal conservative than he is. But when you look at the candidates which are likely to have the ability to be elected, I think it's really narrowed down to now Thompson's out, and I think McCain is out. Neither one of them have a chance. It's going to be Giuliani or
Romney or Huckabee.
Thank you. I'm losing my words.
Well, there's so many, it's a little difficult.
I don't want Giuliani because I think he's really soft on the issues that are most important to me, values. And I guess I'm willing to say most any president is going to come in and fight terrorism. What are you going to do about the issues relating to the family and morality? And back to my first point is we don't see the world like everybody else does.
Well, that's true. And we're going to find out how young people see the world in just a moment. Hey, Reynolds, thanks so much for your call. We really appreciate your calling. We hope you will call back, especially with your experience. It's great to hear from you. Let's go now to Azel and speak with John. Hi, John. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Penna. Thanks for taking my call. On the issue of Huckabee and Clinton, I just have to say that, you know what, Satan thinks he's going to defeat Jesus, too. So,
11 months of Huckabee and Clinton talking to us and campaigning, who are people going to get tired of first? That's a question I have.
They're probably going to get tired of, I think, Hillary. And one thing that I noticed the other day on the Iowa debates, which I watched online, is Huckabee said he's the only one to defeat the Clintons. So, he's got a lot in his favor.
He had to come up against the Clinton machine there in Arkansas once he got into office, didn't he?
Right. And I guess the one thing that's driving me is that I've kind of been torn between Thompson and Huckabee, but I made my decision a couple weeks ago that Huckabee is a guy. Thompson has said he just wants to turn the abortion back over to the states, where Huckabee has said he just wants to abolish it. And that's been the driving factor for me.
Yeah. Well, I guess that defines the difference between Huckabee and one of the problems people have with him, and that is that he's kind of a big government guy. And what Thompson is really saying is, let's go back to the way it was. It's really a constitutional issue of the states' rights and states' power. But there is this whole idea of a human rights amendment that has been in the Republican platform for years, and I think Huckabee would love to see that pass. And of course, it's possible Roe versus Wade might be overturned in the next few years. You never know. Let's go now to Frank in Little Elm. Frank, thanks for calling.
Hi, Ben. Thanks for taking my call. I was going to comment on both topics. I do think that Oprah, who obviously is very popular, has had a lot of influence in the Obama campaign, and I think that celebrity status, quite frankly, I don't think she understands political issues or the social issues either. And I certainly don't agree with her on the spirituality sense. I've listened to her kind of, you find your way to God any way you can, but there is a God, but you just find your way to it. Very mushy universalist.
Right, and she loved that whole phenomenon of the secret, which we've discussed at length on this program. Okay,
exactly.
Tell us about Huckabee, because we've only got a few seconds left.
Yeah, the thing with Huckabee, if it came down to a choice, obviously I would certainly vote for him if he was the candidate. I wish he was stronger in immigration, Penn, I really do. And I'm concerned that he's not the Ronald Reagan conservative in terms of fiscal policy, but he is pro-life, he is pro-family, and I certainly would vote for him in terms of social issues if it came down to him or any, between him and any other candidate.
All right, Frank, thank you so much for your analysis. Well, ladies and gentlemen, next up, George Barna, the founder of the Barna Research Group, says that the president of the Barna Group, who's written a new book, has written some things that Christians are not going to like hearing. We're going to find out what those are coming up next on Jerry Johnson Live.
If you're looking for a college experience that is distinctively Christian, come to Criswell College. Contact us today for information about the upcoming term. Criswell College places a strong emphasis on the Word of God, a Christian worldview, and being an effective witness to a world that needs Jesus Christ. Criswell College is totally committed to the Bible as the authoritative, inspired, and inerrant Word of God to ensure that every student receives a solid biblical and doctrinal foundation. Our worldview approach to ministry prepares every Criswell College student to view each academic discipline through a Christian frame of reference and to engage our culture and the world of ideas from a Christian perspective. Along with this word and worldview emphasis, each Criswell College student gets hands-on ministry training in missions and evangelism to be an effective witness through mission trips at home and abroad. Contact Criswell College today for information about the upcoming term. Call 1-800-899-0012 or on the web go to criswell.edu. That's criswell.edu. You're listening to Jerry Johnson Live. Now here's Penna Dexter.
Carol, if you want to ask us to raise our hands about global warming.
I wasn't doing the global warming. You didn't get a very good response from the Republicans.
I wasn't doing that today. We all want to be on record. We believe in it. We think it's a real problem.
Hillary Clinton speaking for all the Democrat candidates, saying they all believe global warming is a real problem. And, of course, this is in the debate yesterday. We're going to talk about that debate with Carl Jeffers in the next segment. And the Republicans basically all said they believe in it, too. And a lot of them said that even if it's not a problem, we better get moving on it. And that's an issue for another day, because today we've got a great guest. And he says that a generation of young Americans is rejecting Christianity, or at least rejecting a Christianity that they perceive to be anti-homosexual, too political, and hypocritical. This is according to a new study from the Barna Group. We have with us a very talented and accomplished researcher. He's the president of the Barna Group, and his name is David Kinnaman. And he's been with the group since 1995. He's designed and analyzed nearly 500 studies for a variety of churches, nonprofits, and corporations. A lot of these groups rely on the information from Barna Research. And David, thank you so much for being with us.
Hey, thanks, Penna. It's a real pleasure to be with you.
David's got a new book out called Unchristian: What a New Generation Really Thinks About Christianity and Why It Matters. And David, first of all, let me ask you, why does it matter?
Well, it matters immensely because the way we describe this in the book is that the gospel is the most powerful force in the universe. It changes our lives, it changes our communities, it changes our role in representing Jesus to the world. And you know, we're sitting on the history of several centuries of Christian tradition here in America, and a new generation is one of the first now to begin their religious explorations at a place other than Christianity, and they're starting to reject it because they feel rejected by Christians. That's a huge issue that we need to be addressing.
All right, tell us about the study. Who did you study? Did you study Christian young people as a whole, or both?
Both, actually. People ages 16 to 29, and we interviewed both non-Christians as well as young Christians, and we asked them, all right, so what do you think of present-day Christianity in America today? And the most striking finding for us, we didn't give them any prompting on that question, the most significant response was they believe that Christianity is no longer like Jesus intended. And that was the most common response both among Christian young people as well as among non-Christian young people, that they felt that Christianity had become corrupt, that it was off target, that it had gotten off course of what Jesus really intended. And as we studied it over the last 3 years, it was a three-year project to sort of uncover some of the things that we were learning. And we found that, you know, in many ways they've actually got some things right about that. They're reacting to a superficial form of Christianity in which more than 8 out of 10 Americans describe themselves as Christian.
We've reported the news recently that the Willow Creek kind of group of churches has done their own study, and they've said that some of the things they were doing are not working and they're not producing strong, well-discipled believers. Do you think that type of phenomenon in the church has contributed to these answers that you're getting?
Well, listen, in some ways, Willow Creek is one of the best of the types of churches that you'd find in America today. And for them to come back and say, listen, even we, as some of the most intentional, thoughtful, good communicators of the gospel, even we have fallen short in developing disciples, I think it suggests that all of us within the church world need to go back and say, all right, what did Jesus really do? And he was very focused on those 12 relationships, and certainly he had a broader ministry, but his most important impact was he built the church on 12 people.
You think he was seeker-friendly?
Well, he certainly had an approach to working with people that described things in terms that they could understand by telling stories and by talking about deep spiritual principles through in a way that even the masses could understand. So I think in a way he was. But the key is that he was focused on discipling people. And whether we're talking about Willow Creek or any other kind of church, even in those churches that are very focused on teaching the Bible, you still don't have the kind of intimate discipleship, the kind of relationships that are necessary to really transform a person's heart.
Sounds like that's what these young people are seeking. Okay, you study people 16 to 29 inside and outside the church. One of the raps on the church is that it is seen as being anti-homosexual now. Of course, this is in response to a rising homosexual agenda that wants to drive public policy, but it doesn't look like these young people are really explaining it that way.
Well, I think it's one of the most complicated issues. Homosexuality is tough because you've got significant and sophisticated media strategies and political strategies that have been put in place. And, of course, there's also very much a mindset within America today that whatever works for a person is right for them. And so the culture accepts this idea pretty readily, and a new generation certainly does as well. But what was really surprising to me is how much really lack of compassion the church has had about this particular issue. We're much more willing to accept divorce and pornography and sexual fantasies or other kinds of things within our churches than we are homosexuality. And really, the homosexual community is a broken community, and it needs God's love and redemption and grace, just like the rest of us. And instead of working with those individuals and talking with them and being good friends and relational and trying to, understand how can we, help to solve some of the problems that they're facing in dealing with HIV/AIDS and in dealing with their relational isolation, the church has been feisty and arrogant and political about some of those issues, and these are real people that need God's love and acceptance and grace.
There's a young church pastor, you probably studied him, Rob Bell, who says that in order to make a judgment about homosexuals, you must have a homosexual friend. And that may be the way these young people are looking at things. All right. What about the political arena? Because one of the other pieces of information you found out is that the church is too political. Christians are too political. We're too right-wing, I guess probably too identified with the Republican Party. And in a sense, I think that was a response for the church getting out of politics. A whole generation is getting involved or has gotten involved, and now we're being criticized for it.
Well, again, these are very complex issues that are difficult to describe in just a minute or two of a radio interview, but very simply, when you think about the way you represent your faith to people, because one of the arguments we make in the book is that it's not necessary to get out of politics. This project really changed my perspectives about a lot of the things that I was doing as a Christian. It was a roadmap, really, to understanding how could I engage my neighbors in a more gospel-like Christianity. And what was so surprising to me in this study about being perceived as too political, I didn't come to the conclusion that Christians need to be out of politics, but what we came to the conclusion was is that there's a number of different problems across the course of our country and around the world, and Christians are more likely to be known for talking about political issues as if we have really simple answers and as if there really aren't people behind those answers or those solutions. And so for me, for your listeners, the degree to which we're political ought to be to reflect our passion and love for Christ as well as our love for other people. And too often people recognize us first as Republicans, maybe second as consumers, and third or fourth or fifth as Christians. Mm-hmm. And so when our priorities get out of whack, we come across as, political animals rather than Jesus' disciples.
David Kinnaman is my guest. He is the president of the Barna Group, a very important research group in this country, and his new book is Unchristian, What a New Generation Really Thinks About Christianity and Why It Matters. Now, David, you have a group that sort of conducted this or commissioned this study or these set of studies called the Fermi Project, F-E-R-M-I. Who is involved in this project? I understand it's sort of a collective of church leaders.
Yeah, the Fermi Project is led by a really good friend of mine, Gabe Lyons, and it is a collective of different people in the social sector as well as in the church sector, education and business.
Any names we'd recognize?
Well, people like Chuck Colson and Brian McLaren and Andy Stanley. I mean, it's a full gamut of individuals.
People so you've got people from the Emergent Church. You've got a Chuck Colson, a Prison Fellowship. Who else?
A full range of people from different pastors, young pastors, Rick McKinley, Chris C., John Stott has contributed to the book. Part of the reason we did this, we've got a pretty broad range of people from different theological perspectives, but all of us hold very true to the idea that Jesus is the center of our faith and that what it means to be a Christian ought to be reclaimed. One of the really interesting things from the study is that young people are saying they're less and less likely to say they want to be described as a Christian. And it's not because they're ashamed of the gospel, as the Bible talks about, but they actually are ashamed of maybe some of the ways in which the Christian community has not done good to the world. And this broad collective of individuals is really trying to say, listen, let's reclaim what it means to be a Christian is about people who care about the world. We care about the environment. We care about the souls of our neighbors. We care about the neighborhoods we live in. We care about our schools.
Would you say that, in a sense, Christianity, if these young people are any indication, which they probably are, is moving toward a social gospel that would reach beyond the moral issues that we like to talk about, for instance, on this program, to the issues of, you know, what do you do about global poverty or global warming, for instance, things like that? Would that be a fair characterization of this next generation, at least as they stand now?
Well, I think they're pretty diverse. In fact, we find that with young evangelicals, they're as motivated as ever about homosexuality. They just say that the way in which the church has engaged that is maybe not the right approach. And they also believe that there are other issues around the globe that also need our attention. I think the way to describe that is that they're capable of holding many things in tension, and they're willing to address those things in a different way. The problem is, as I study even young evangelicals, I'm concerned that we're making consumers out of cause, and I'm most concerned for just the population in general. I think many evangelicals, young evangelicals, are able to hold these things in tension more appropriately. But I think maybe the older church has missed some important issues around the globe, but young people need to be focused as much as ever on some of the key, moral issues, some of the first things that that will determine, the state of the family and the way in which our communities are living.
Well, David Kinnaman, I could talk with you all day on this. This is fascinating. The book is Unchristian, What a New Generation Really Thinks About Christianity and Why It Matters. Thanks so much for joining us. You've got a lot of great information here. We're going to need to invite you back to talk about some more, but thank you for being with us today.
Yeah, it'd be a pleasure to do that in the future. Thanks, Penna.
And again, the book is Unchristian, and it's from the Barna Group. David Kinnaman is the president, and he's surveying young people, and we do need to be concerned about what they think about Christianity. Are they going to carry the banner of Christ? Do they think we're hypocritical? Or are they just young? We'll be right back.
You're listening to Jerry Johnson Live. Now here's Penna Dexter.
We can actually make absolutely certain, starting here in Iowa, that we make this country better than we left it.
Thank you.
Leave it better than we started.
John Edwards getting a little bit confused yesterday at the Des Moines Register debate, which most people say really didn't highlight a lot of differences between the candidates. We'll ask our guest, Carl Jeffers, in a moment. Stay with us also for the next segment. We're going to tell you why we're giving Plano, Texas, the Grinch Award. You won't want to miss that. But with us now is Carl Jeffers. He hosts the syndicated radio show On Fire with Carl Jeffers. He is a popular liberal commentator. He's been heard on national TV and radio. And we've given him the title here at Jerry Johnson Live, our favorite liberal. Hello, Carl.
Hi, Penna, and happy holiday season to you. And I just try to live up to that top billing, but that's a tough one.
Well, Merry Christmas to you. We are giving this Grinch Award lately, so we're going to say Merry Christmas, but we also say Happy Hanukkah and Happy Kwanzaa and everything else.
Thank you.
Okay. Carl, what about the debate yesterday? Was it as boring as everybody said? I didn't see it.
Well, I haven't heard anyone say it was boring. I think that everyone talked about it as being a love fest rather than a slug fest. and I think that's probably appropriate in contrast to the previous debates. There were no real confrontational policy discussions. No one went after the other. And that was actually similar to the Republican debate 2 days before. It was pretty much people explaining their arguments rather than trying to contrast the ideas that they had with the other candidates.
Since it was in the middle of the day, perhaps they were just a little bit more tame. I think it also had to do with the moderator. It wasn't like a Chris Matthews type or an Anderson Cooper type mixing it up. But let's just move on, because even though this debate didn't highlight a lot of differences, we are seeing some movement in the Democrat presidential race right now. Barack Obama certainly rising. We've got Howard Fineman saying that there's a hillabust, and National Polls, he says, give Hillary a double-digit lead, but they mean absolutely nothing. What matters now is not the number, but the direction. And you've got Obama moving on up. He's ahead in Iowa, toss-up in New Hampshire, dead heat in South Carolina, moving up among women and blacks. What do you attribute this to?
Oh, well, it definitely can be attributed to two things. One, Barack Obama himself has gotten...
Hey, Barama, that's a great name. Let's start using it, guys.
Obama has become far more comfortable himself with himself, I believe. And you know, we talk about seasoning, experience, and leadership, and everyone has been concerned that Obama hasn't had that. But you can grow up awfully quickly on the campaign trail. And so he himself speaks more confidently. He looks better. He looks more poised. And I think that translates to people responding to him. The second thing that's happened is that Hillary Clinton ran a perfectly flawless campaign for the first 6 to 7, 8 months of this year. And in the last 2 or 3 months, particularly dating back perhaps to the comment about driver's licenses, she's had some missteps, and that clearly has contributed, as well as Barack Obama looking much better. But the only difference I would have with my friend Howard Fineman, who I greatly respect, is that I agree that Barack Obama has the direction, he has the momentum. However, the fact is that you cannot totally discount a double-digit lead in the national polls. You have to overcome it. And Barack Obama is moving in a direction to overcome it, but you can't say it doesn't mean anything until you actually have eliminated it right now. She still does have a double-digit lead in the national polls, and that is what Obama has to chip away at in the individual primaries.
Does Bill Clinton help Hillary, hurt Hillary, or a little of both?
Oh, in the Democratic primaries, there's no question that Bill Clinton helps Hillary. What they are trying to make sure now is that he gets the proper exposure and in a way that he can actually help her, just as Oprah Winfrey has helped Barack Obama. Celebrities can help in the primaries more than in the general election because they are tuned to a particular base, just as a Pat Robertson or if Jerry Falwell was still with us, he would be able to help the Republican candidate in the primaries more than he could in the general election.
Well, Pat Robertson doesn't seem to be helping Giuliani right now. Huckabee is rising. But let me ask you about Bill. Are some Democrats worried about having him back in the White House?
No, Democrats are not worried about having him back in the White House when just about all Democrats and most Republicans were doing better when he was in the White House. In fact, many are encouraging him to play a very active role because they demonstrated, at least with Bill Clinton in the White House, that they preferred the way the country was moving, direction that the country was in. So,
well, we just got to wonder what kind of activity that will be. Let me ask another question with regard to this. And that is the black vote, Carl, because, you know, it was the white vote where Obama was leading, and now the black vote is coming on. And we've had a caller who said they definitely think it has to do with Oprah. Is it Oprah, or is it that Obama is finding his voice, that he is speaking to the black community? I know the black community is not a monolith, but he is rising with blacks and women. So what about that?
Well, I think that without question, Oprah has had a tremendous effect in terms of a positive impact on the black vote in South Carolina, particularly. Remember, when we're talking about Iowa and New Hampshire, we're not talking about very much of a black vote. But the African-American community in South Carolina represents 50% of the vote the total vote in the Democratic primary, and that's significant. And yes, Oprah has had a very positive impact in that particular race, although it's interesting, Penna, that in the overall national community, Oprah actually has more influence among white suburbanite female women than she does among African-American women.
Yeah, a lot of people love her. Carl Jeffords is our guest, and I'm not arguing with Carl today. I'm asking him his opinion because there are so many phenomenon in here in the Democrat race that I want to know your thoughts about, Carl. And one of them has to do with Hillary's campaign. I mean, she's having to scramble now, and she's not the inevitable candidate. And one of the things that's happened is one of her campaign leaders, Mr. Shaheen, made a statement. He's actually a New Hampshire leader, and his wife was governor of New Hampshire. He made a statement about Obama's drug use, which Obama has written about in his book and talked about on the campaign trail. Whether that's appropriate or not is another question, because often he does it with high school students. But he's brought this issue up, and now he's out of the campaign. Was this floated on purpose?
No, actually, I did an interview earlier this morning, and that same question was asked of me. And by the way, Penna, even when we argue, we do it in a civil, enjoyable way.
It's a lot of fun.
I enjoy coming on with you and Jerry. But today we're just contemplating. The reality is that this would have been a different issue had there been a policy meeting with Howard Wolfson or Betty Greenwald, the two top chairmen of the Clinton campaign, or Hillary herself involved in the strategy, and they made a determination to let's float this. But that's not what happened. Bill Shaheen was so powerful on his own right. After all, as you say, his wife was governor of the state. He is the top political operative in the state. They didn't feel they needed to float this by the Clinton campaign or run it by. He was doing this probably out of a little desperation because of the fact that Hillary was dropping in the polls in New Hampshire, and he wanted to raise some issues that he thought could maybe impact and stop some of the momentum. Whether that was right or wrong, I do think it was inappropriate, but we have to separate this out that it was not the responsibility of the Clinton campaign. They didn't have anything to do with it, but now that it's done, Hillary Clinton has, and she has to, take responsibility for it. She has done that, and they have fired him as their campaign director in New Hampshire.
Okay, but Carl, it seems like they've also accelerated it because Mark Penn is another powerful guy. She's the chief strategist for the campaign, and he was on Hardball, and he said, he was saying this kind of the same thing you're saying, but then he said, and I'm quoting him, the issue related to cocaine use is not something the campaign is in any way raising. So he brought up the C word, and it's not Christmas.
And you know, Mark Penn is basically a pollster, and that's his background, and the reality is he's not a seasoned political operative, because if he were, he wouldn't have made that statement nor used those words. And that's exactly what the Clinton campaign needs now, is a Jim Carville type, a Paul Begala type, exactly the type that Mike Huckabee just got in Ed Rollins. And maybe Bill Clinton is arguing that they need someone like that, and they best listen, because that's what they need. What Mark Penn said only highlighted the possibility that this is a negative attack. But that was a spokesman for her, and it hurts Hillary.
Yeah.
He doesn't like it, but Mark Penn is not that seasoned, and we give him too much credit.
He's been around a long time. I find that hard to buy. Carl, one more thing. Okay, you mentioned Huckabee. First of all, are you going to tell me who you'd like on the Democrat side? Will you tell me that?
Oh, I have said consistently that I believe Hillary Clinton has the best chance to win in November for the Democrats, and I believe that John McCain provides the most difficult challenge for her of the Republicans. And I love Barack Obama, but I am not interested in sitting around the Thanksgiving table next year talking about how wonderful it was that he came so close. And the reality is, I just think America is not quite ready for him, and he is not the same as Colin Powell, and I hope people won't make that mistake. America would have elected Colin Powell because America loves generals.
Are the Democrats hoping that Huckabee's the nominee?
I think that, actually there is a suggestion that the strongest ticket that Republicans could run would be John McCain as president and Mike Huckabee as vice president. But the reality is Mike Huckabee was the one candidate who was never planning to run for president, and as a result, he has never been vetted and scrutinized like the others, and so there is a constant possibility of impeachment. for things he did as governor when he was governor for two terms and things he has said, and those kinds of things can hurt him as he goes forward.
Very interesting. Thank you so much, Carl. We appreciate your being with us today. We will talk to you again very soon.
Penn, I look forward to it. Give my best to Jerry and to all your listeners, the best of the holiday season, and Merry Christmas to everyone. And thanks, Penn, for having me with you today.
Okay, Merry Christmas. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we've already told you that tonight's Grinch Award is going to Plano, Texas. Coming up next, Hiron Sasser of Liberty Legal Institute will tell us why. Stay tuned for that.
If you're looking for a college experience that is distinctively Christian, come to Criswell College. Contact us today for information about the upcoming term. Criswell College places a strong emphasis on the Word of God, a Christian worldview, and being an effective witness to a world that needs Jesus Christ. Criswell College is totally committed to the Bible as the authoritative, inspired, and inerrant Word of God to ensure that every student receives a solid biblical and doctrinal foundation. Our worldview approach to ministry prepares every Criswell College student to view each academic discipline through a Christian frame of reference and to engage our culture and the world of ideas from a Christian perspective. Along with this word and worldview emphasis, each Criswell College student gets hands-on ministry training in missions and evangelism to be an effective witness through mission trips at home and abroad. Contact Criswell College today for information about the upcoming term. Call 1-800-899-0012 or on the web go to criswell.edu. That's criswell.edu.
You're a foul one, Mr. Grinch. You're a nasty, wasty skunk. Your heart is full of unwashed socks. Your soul is full of gunk, Mr. Grinch. The three words that best describe you are as follows, and I quote, stink, stank, stunk.
Well, there's no mystery tonight. We've already told you that we are giving tonight's Grinch Award to Plano, Texas, a little bit north of here. And, you know, we've already seen candy canes banned from the schools there. Even red and green Christmas plates at the holiday party, in the Plano School District. So what is next in Plano? Well, there is a big, beautiful new recreation center there called the Muhlenbeck Center. It's got a fabulous swimming pool. It's even got this giant water slide. It looks almost like you're at Wet n' Wild. And guess what? There's a Christmas controversy surrounding the Muhlenbeck Center. In fact, the Plano-based religious liberties group, Liberty Legal Institute, is filing a demand letter against the city of Plano on behalf of a Mr. and Mrs. Hawley of Plano. And with us to talk about it is Hiron Sasser of Liberty Legal. Hiron, thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me.
Tell us the story.
Well, you know, the city spends $23 million on this pool facility, and the swim team comes along and wants to be able to use it for their practices and for their swim meets, and the city says, well, if you want to do that, then you're going to have to be the ones that buy the scoreboard equipment. So they held this fundraiser, the swim team did, selling these bricks along the sidewalk that would be put in next to the pool facility. For $100 a pop, you could buy a brick. And you could put whatever message you want to put on the brick. And the company had choices of symbols that you could put on there. Some of them were happy faces, stars. Well, one of them was a cross. And so about 8 to 10 families bought bricks that had the cross on them. They sold 100 bricks total. And then next thing you know, the city comes along and says, well, we don't like the fact that there's these crosses on there. So they literally... after the bricks have already been set into place, they rip the bricks out, turn them around face down, and smash the cross in the dirt.
So you had an empty brick. You had an empty brick, and the cross is face down.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. So their kid's name and graduation year, the cross that was next to it, all got smashed down in the dirt for this brick they'd paid $100 for. And this is one of the symbols that was being offered as part of the fundraiser.
All right, somebody got to them, obviously. Somebody put the list out, and then somebody else got to them from the ACLU or somewhere. Don't you agree?
Well, I think it was just a matter of some person, some weirdo, just walking by and said, hey, oh, I'm offended by this cross, and so they made one phone call, but they're so predisposed to give in to that that they just turned the bricks over out of a reaction to that and smashed the cross down in the dirt. It was ridiculous.
So what did you guys do?
Well, we sent a letter to the school district. This was to the city. I'm sorry. This is so easy that, you know, we thought, well, goodness sakes, this kind of stuff's already been litigated. There's already been cases about bricks and these fundraising projects, and that you cannot discriminate against religious speech and symbols. So we sent them a letter, gave them the law, and and within 3 hours they were able to send a brick crew out there and turn the bricks back over again. Oh. Like they were supposed to be.
So the bricks are back.
The bricks are back, but instead of just ending there, the city said, well, if anyone else wants to have crosses on their bricks, we promise to discriminate against them, those that will come next, those that will continuously buy these bricks as part of this fundraising event.
So are you going to continue then fighting Plano?
Well, we will. Our client's been satisfied, but as soon as there's someone else who wants to come along and buy one of these bricks to support the swim team for $100 and wants to put a cross on there, then we will represent them free of charge and sue the city into oblivion, because this is an easy case to whip the city on.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've got a lot of Plano listeners. Hear the call. You didn't hear it here, but actually you did hear it here. You know, Hiram, we've seen Plano in the news for these religious freedom cases for years, even decades. And, you know, really what happens is that often the ACLU gets involved, either finding an offended party or being contacted by an offended party. And so the schools in Plano have also had their own problems with things like candy canes. Tell us about that. Tell us actually how it stands right now.
Well, what happened was, the school district in Plano, they banned any of the kids bringing any kind of religious messages, such as the legend of the candy cane that was attached to the candy cane pens that Jonathan Morgan wanted to bring to his winter party, and they were allowed to exchange gifts. But all the religious items were confiscated and censored and discriminated against because they couldn't have those kind of religious items in there. So we ended up, you know, obviously writing a letter trying to tell them that it's the law. They wouldn't believe us. So we went to the judge. We got a temporary restraining order against them to allow the parties to continue with the kids being able to bring their religious items. Then the judge went further and ruled that their policy was unconstitutional, but it did not end there.
Okay, so you've already gotten a decision from a judge saying that the school needs to change its position, but the school did not do so?
Yeah, exactly. What happened was the judge issues this ruling and says this policy is totally unconstitutional, and the this section of the policy that one of the ones we were challenging, and the school district complainant refuses to abide by the judge's order. They outright refuse to remove that portion from their policy that the judge found unconstitutional.
Okay, let me ask you a broader question here, because why is it important to keep on fighting these cases, Hiram? You know, we could just say, okay, let's just let the schools have their winterizing of things instead of calling it Christmas. We've already basically given up on manger scenes. You have to put Santa Claus there or a reindeer or something. You can't just have a manger scene on public property. So why not just give up on the schools and kind of just go to our churches and celebrate Christmas there?
Well, this is not about what the school's doing. This is the school telling these little impressionable kids that their religious beliefs, their faith, the things that they identify with are bad, have no place in the public, and are to be treated the same as pornography, that a copy of the Bible is to be treated the same as a copy of Playboy. It's not to be seen in public view. That's what they're teaching our kids. And at this young age, we can't afford to let our kids just succumb to this idea that their religion is supposed to go into their pocket or in a closet, and they're not allowed to talk about it with anybody.
You know, a lot of people say if you care about your kids' faith, then put them in a private school or homeschool them. And a lot of Christian families are doing that, and that is a very good thing. But there are many families who are Christians who are in the public school. There are many families who are involved in the public arena. And we are to be salt and light in that. And Christmas time is a great time to do that, because it's a time when a lot of people are focused on this holiday. Hiram Sasser and the Liberty Legal Institute are out there fighting for your right to talk about your faith. And Hiram, I want to thank you for what you're doing, and thank you for being with us today.
Well, no problem. We enjoy helping folks and getting the word out.
That's Hiram Sasser, and we are grateful for groups that do this, and they do it for people just like you and me. And ladies and gentlemen, at this time, where we look to Christ and we look to the reason for the season, we're grateful that we still have the right in this country, in our schools and in our public square, to talk about the cross of Christ. Have a great weekend and a Merry Christmas.
You've been listening to Jerry Johnson Live, a Christian Worldview radio show. Join Dr. Jerry Johnson, president of Criswell College and Criswell Communications, Monday through Friday at 5 p.m. for an hour of relevant discussion of news and culture from a Christian perspective.